everyone, and welcome to a Friends with Fantasy Benefits, what would usually be a concept podcast. Today we have started the way too early mock drafts that Justin uses as, and the whole industry uses, to gauge how people are feeling about players towards the end of the season. And so it's such a valuable tool for us. I thought maybe we should share some of the things that we've learned to you guys. And of course, some of this will seem like it's repetitive over the three-sport draft, but then again, some of it will not. My steady Eddie, Andrew Dewhurst, is here. We've been battling a couple different technical issues over recent weeks, so it's odd that we've been a while without getting a podcast out to you guys. Andrew, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing just fine. I know hockey season is really starting to kick in. I gave you a reference on Twitter the other day, so hopefully you get some extra listeners from that. I want to jump right into the way too early mocks. I got the number one overall pick, which is something that I haven't had in a while. Where did you pick from, Andrew?
I picked from the 10 spot.
Yeah, and in the first round, I ended up with Mike Trout, of course, and Andrew ended up with Max Scherzer. And Max Scherzer actually lasted a little longer than that in our draft. Actually, I think he went right around 10. He went at 9. I don't have any problem starting out a team with Max Scherzer in the present pitching climate. And oddly enough, in our little pre-talk, Andrew was talking about how shallow starting pitching is, and that includes the fact that he started off with Max Scherzer. What do you think with the key advantages were, and what do you feel like you're sort of behind the eight ball on offense when you started, or did you feel pretty good about the whole thing?
I mean, through six rounds, like, I feel good about my offense. Like, I'm just looking at this now going kind of in retrospect saying, I wish I had another starting pitcher to add already. So I'm not doing such a glob dive, which is kind of where the pacing I'm heading towards right now. So, like, I mean, obviously, like, what I love about getting Max Scherzer at in the first round at 10, like, I'd be willing to take him as high as 6 personally. It's just that you've got a the most dominant pitcher in baseball over the last 3 years. Doesn't look like he's slowing down. The Nationals, although even if they lose Bryce Harper, they're not going to be a terrible team next year, at least probably no worse than they've been this year. So there's a good chance for wins, and you know you're getting the innings and the strikeouts from them. So just feels like a player that's super safe inside that first round. You know you're going to get the value, and you know it's probably not going to be a bust.
Yeah, well, there's really no reason for us to talk about Trout at 1. I think if you're listening to this podcast, you know all the different value that he offers you. I will say this. Having Trout at 1 seems like it can put you a little behind the eight ball as far as filling in your infield, but at the same time, category-wise, you think you've gotten like a, you know, roster glue galore with having Mike Trout. In the second round, which, of course, it turns out to be the 24th pick in these 12-team mocks, Javier Baez went right before me, who I definitely would have taken because you guys out there know how much I like roster flexibility. But I ended up taking Trevor Story, who I think is going to finish in the top 5, at least for the National League MVP. So I was pretty happy to get a shortstop because, once again, you know, once I had an outfielder, I felt like it might be a little tricky to piece together solid players at all the infield positions. My third pick, and we'll group these together, my third pick was Blake Snell, who I did take around the 9th starting pitcher off the board. I certainly could have gone Garrett Cole. But why don't you, you agree with Trevor Story being around a top 25 player off the season that he's having? He's 33 home runs and 100 RBIs, and he runs some on top of it. And what do you think about Blake Snell? You think I'm pushing the window there?
I think you are pushing the window on Blake Snell a little bit. I don't have any problem with it. Like, he's been, with how good he's been, it's very possible that he does it again next year, or even better, right? Because he's quite young still. I just wonder, you know, how much better will the Rays be? Are you going to get more? Is there enough win potential there to get the value at the third round?
Yeah, I mean, it was tricky for sure, but obviously the big four starting pitchers were well off the board. And I had to choose, and I hate it when I do this, but one, I try to draft a team sort of how I would draft a team. Okay, I already have Aaron Nola on the three-sport league. So Aaron Nola in my head was like, well, I want to kind of want to see how my team would develop without Nola. And it always also mentally seems like you're putting all your eggs in one basket. So it was, it came down to Aaron Nola or Gerrit Cole or Blake Snell for me. And Blake Snell has just been so dominant. And I like to root for the Rays as a generality, you know, the sort of the, you know,
like
the
Brewers now.
Yeah. Well, it's just like they're doing things, at a rock bottom financial level. But it seems like they've got a really good group of players right now that is buying in, and they're finishing the season really strong right now. So it was tricky. I mean, Gerrit Cole, I think I'm a little concerned that he can repeat exactly what he's done this year. There's some concern there. And I thought Blake Snell perhaps had the most upside, which is quite a statement with the group of pitchers that were left after I took Blake Snell. You know, Trevor Bauer is another one. I even took him over Luis Severino, who I'm a little I'm a little concerned about Severino's finish to the season here. And he's never put together a sort of a starting line to finish line season. Do you think that's too harsh on Severino? I mean, he has gone through he's gone through a pretty rough patch.
He has, but I mean, I worry less about that with young pitchers because I think it's just a stamina thing, and they'll build it up. Like we all know that Severino's stuff's electric. He's going to be a guy that gets guys out. And I would rather actually see like a dip in his production than like see an injury, right? Like I think, so I mean, personally, I understand your reasoning. And I mean, it's a spot where I think there's, when you've got five options, like it's probably, you know, picking one of the five is not going to probably work out terribly for you, right? What I'm actually most surprised about is the willingness to take Javier Baez in the second round. Personally, is that like I couldn't consider him in the second round. I don't think you're ever going to get this year again from him. Like with his contact percentage being so low, and I feel like I've just seen this like kind of plastered everywhere because the Alberto Mondesi conversation that seems to be blowing up Twitter lately of like, you know, how high is this guy going to get pushed in these drafts? I just can't trust it, right? Like when guys are only actually making contact like about 2/3 of the time, being able to trust batting average and home runs and steals, it becomes more difficult because, you know, they're getting a large percent of, I feel like there's a lot of luck involved to get you to that point. Cause essentially when you make contact, it has to be good because you're missing 1/3 of the time.
So would you have preferred Story over Baez?
I would have, absolutely. Huh. And personally, like I understand taking Story in the second, I just don't trust it yet. I mean, cause you have the big month in his rookie season. And then he kind of like flopped down. And then he's had a great year this year. But that's just personal preference. I prefer to try to get guys I can trust a little bit more that early. Even if it means that I'm missing out on, you know, somebody like Trevor Story who could very well be like 40-20 next year.
Well, you know, oddly enough, four of the next five players that were taken after Story were outfielders. And I'm a little leery to start outfielder. So that may be some of what pushed Story a little bit for me. I think there's also a bit of a safety net in Colorado. Just the concept that it's such a run scoring environment, seemingly. There's always three or four, seems like three or four stellar offensive players in Colorado, regardless of the humidor, etc. So I was relatively okay there with I was relatively okay there with Story, and I knew that maybe sometimes you take people in these mocks to say, look at this guy, look at a 1.87 ERA over 160 plus innings for Blake Snell. You know what I mean? Sometimes you sort of make a point. Like, I agree with everything you're saying about the other pitchers that I could have taken, and maybe they were a touch safer. But at the same time, sometimes you say to yourself, I think maybe because he's in Tampa, we don't realize exactly how good he's been. If he was on a team that was remotely in contention, and if he had, because he did have one small DL stint, I believe, but if he had another 15 or 20 innings, I think he'd be a Cy Young candidate for sure. So, I mean, but I certainly, that's why we do this, because it creates conversations. For sure, for certain, and I'll be interested to see if I'm one of the earliest people in the mocks to have taken the gamble on Blake Snell. I remember in the three sport league, Blake Snell went like four or five picks, pitcher picks after I took Aaron Nola, and I was kind of it sort of threw me into this concept that he's kind of a deal right now if he repeats himself. How about you? How'd the second and third round go for you?
I took Freddie Freeman in the second round, and got Juan Soto in the third. To be honest, I did consider actually Soto in the second, which sounds probably contrary to everything I just said about how much risk you're taking. But I think for a guy that's 19, that's hit 298 in the majors right now with 20 home runs, he's got and five steals, in just like 379 at bats. Like, you're looking at potentially, I feel like Soto could be in the MVP conversation in the next 2 years, if he adds any growth at all. And even if he adds no growth and you just get to 150 games, I still think you're looking at least a 30 home run bat with a guy that hits 300. And even if he didn't add it, like, if he got to 10 steals, I think that's going to be a fantastic value in round three. As he, like, we saw Cunha in my draft, Cunha went in the second. And I think of them both as being probably second round values, but with Soto having the safer floor. As far as Freddie Freeman goes, it's probably a pick that I look back and go, I would do something different with moving forward. It's not that I don't like Freddie Freeman, but the numbers don't really, like, when I look back at them, I'm not completely blown away. Like, you're probably getting, he's going to finish the year with about 25 home runs with 100 runs and 100 RBIs and hitting 300. So it's not, and just about, and 10 steals. So it's not terrible value there. I just not sure that's how I would go again. But at least for this team's sake, like in the first two rounds, I feel like I've built a pretty nice floor for average, so that if I wanted to make a home runs play with a guy like Joey Gallo later in the rounds, it's something I could do, because I should be able to withstand that, like, 190 to 210 batting average.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the nicest things about Freddie Freeman. He's just really, really solid. I didn't mind your Freddie Freeman pick there at all, and he went in virtually the same spot in my mock draft. So I thought that was pretty solid. And the Soto Acuna discussion is going to be very interesting going into next year. I mean, Acuna sort of seems to get the nod over him because Acuna has more upside in stolen bases. And he also, once he got hot, he got really hot. Whereas Soto has been very steady. So, and the Nationals are going in the tank while Atlanta is winning their division. So I think that's jaded the perception as well. I already own Soto for next year, I should say, because I own him in a keeper league where I threw all my fab at him when he got called up. And so I'm very excited about owning him long term. So I certainly understand your excitement thereof. And that's also right where Soto went in my mock draft. When it got back to me on the 4-5 turn, I took Gleyber Torres and Cody Bellinger. And there's some interesting things about both these picks. First of all, Eugenio Suarez and Ozzy Albies went right in front of where I took Torres. We're using sort of a draft guide that goes off of last year's ranking. So some of these guys maybe sneak down a little bit because they're not, you know, right in front of the face of these drafters. But these are not normal drafters either. You know, I don't think I mentioned, you know, Paul Spohr and some of the CBS Sports guys are in my league. So, you know, there's a there's quite a bit of depth of knowledge. So I got Gleyber Torres at 48. Do you think am I pushing the window on every one of my picks?
I don't think you are on Torres. I think, like, I would guess it's very possible that once we get closer to draft season, I think you could see Torres pushed up higher than that. Like, I think he could go be a second or third round guy, just because, you know, he gets that Yankees boost because people get the Yankees boost. But in this case, I think the park helps him quite a bit. The division helps him quite a bit. So I think there's reasons to, like, I think he's good value where you got him there. And I would be surprised if you saw him go too much later across the board. I'm just going to try to see where he went in my draft. I'm pretty good with that as a, I mean, especially as a shortstop value.
As a second base value in this case.
Yeah, sorry, yeah.
Oddly enough, I mean, I think Cody Bellinger is kind of interesting. I mean, we already saw him have this monster stretch of his rookie season. And this season, he really came on strong after the All-Star break. But he's been a relative disappointment as far as what we thought his ceiling could be. But he's still in his early 20s. I'm prone. I really like taking a first baseman slash outfielder, which is something we haven't directly talked about, just because I think it opens up a lot of windows for ways that you can move him around later in the draft, because first base has been a position where we've had a lot of breakouts in recent years, which we have talked about a lot. And the outfield is something where you've got to get, you know, five or six of them to feel comfortable by the draft's end. So having that flexibility, I think, is very nice. I think Bellinger can hit 270. I think he can hit 30 home runs, and I think he can steal between 14 and 20 bases. So I'm pretty bullish on Bellinger. Do you think that's overly bullish?
I agree on everything. I think the only thing I'm would question really is the steals, but I mean, I think that's otherwise, I think you're, like, I'm in agreement with you. I think that's pretty much what I would expect from him.
And, you know, top 50, I mean, he's a player that I think went well above that last year as well, which is one of the things I like to do.
He's the second rounder last year.
Yeah,
for sure.
So I'm really curious. I want to mention one thing. I nearly took Walker Buehler as my second pitcher in round 5. And I just thought, boy, taking him in the top 50 is just too early, right? And so I took Cody Bellinger, and Walker Buehler was auto-drafted instantly after I took Bellinger. Does it surprise you that Walker Buehler's a top 50 pick?
A little bit. He was he just went my draft in this as the second pick of the 7th round.
Well, you'll like this then. The guy who took Walker Buehler, that's his very first pitcher.
Wow. That's bold.
I find that to be a leap of faith. Now, I think Buehler is going to be very effective. I think there's some serious questions about his durability, and this I'm sure we'll revisit this at a later date. You know, I love Walker Buehler's talent, and I do understand how weak starting pitching is. But I thought top 50 was pushing it. He took Walker Buehler in front of Madison Bumgarner and James Paxton, to put it in context.
Yeah.
So that's and Zach Greinke. So if you want to talk about differences between some form of safety and what seems to be Dodger pitchers are still have a stigma to me as well. You know, I'm still wondering how long term they're going to use the 10-day DL. Anyway, who did you take here when you got to this 4-5?
Yeah, I got Rhys Hoskins at 4, and Eugenio Suarez at 5. Both of which I'm very happy to get there. I do feel like Suarez fell in this case mostly because of how it's laid out in the draft room. Because I think he would have been like 150 plus players down. So he's another guy. I mean, nice batting average, good amount of home runs, good amount of RBIs, score some runs. I think people kind of forget that Cincinnati has, well, they're not a very good team. They do have a pretty good offense. So that's definitely getting Suarez at pick 58 feels like nice value, as does getting Rhys Hoskins with the 39th pick, because I think he was probably a second rounder this year. And in my eyes, he did exactly what I kind of thought he would do. He's at 31 home runs, another 90 RBI guy, gonna, you know, 90 runs, hitting 250. I mean, I think the steals haven't been there in the way that people hoped, but I'm still good with this pick at in that spot.
I think probably wrongfully, people seem to be wondering, you know, there's been a Philly fade here. Sorry, JR. There's been a Philly fade here at the end of the season. But I still think the team in general is ahead of schedule. But I just want to mention that Rhys Hoskins losing first base eligibility is kind of an interesting thing. And there's sort of this idea around him that Philadelphia has made their lineup wonky, you know, with Santana and Hoskins. Although, you know, I don't think Hoskins has performed dreadfully. He's performed admirably in the outfield, considering that he didn't really come up as an outfielder. But there is this perception that Philadelphia may do this major roster shakeup. And I don't see any way that Rhys Hoskins isn't in their future plans. But I hear people say stupid things like, you know, oh, they're going to trade Carlos Santana. Well, how are you going to trade him? I mean, that's not, you know what I mean? In fantasy baseball, you trade Carlos Santana, right? In regular baseball, it's pretty hard to trade somebody who's got, you know, $50+ million left and is really a first baseman only. I mean, it's a lot trickier in the real world than it is in fantasy. You know, in fantasy, we can start fourth or first baseman, you know, conceivably, depending on eligibility and utility spots and stuff. That's not really how it works in the real world. So I think that's one thing that pushed him down. The other thing is he started off pretty slow this year, which I don't think should be a surprise to anyone. But at the same time, that was his first season where he could start off slow. So I think there's some question on if he's going to be a slow starter regularly, which I think is obviously jumping the gun at such a young player. You know, jumping the gun, thinking that could happen. So I think there's this little cloud over what's going to happen in Philadelphia, and that may have helped push him down the draft a little bit, because he went in roughly the exact same spot in my mock. So I think that's about where he's going to go. Somehow or another, I maybe it's because Boston and New York are so close to them. But somehow or another, even when the Phillies had a really good year, regardless, somehow or another, a lot of these players just don't seem to get the hype that they deserve, because once after the slow start, Rhys Hoskins has been great. So I certainly understand your liking of him. On pick 6 and 7, I took Jose Berríos and Jesus Aguilar, and you've already mentioned to me that Jose Berríos is still available in your draft. I do think he's getting overlooked I like the steady progression that he's made. You know, he started off really hot, and then he had a downturn when he's in his rookie season. And this year, I think he's been pretty steady and pretty good. So I'm obviously high. I hate seeing mock draft results across all these mocks that we do, and then finding out that I was the highest person on Berríos. But do you think it's possible that I'm the highest person on Barrios, taking him with the last pick of the sixth round?
It's possible. I mean, but I think one of the really nice things about having such a widespread use of people in these mock drafts is that you do kind of get regional biases in different ways. And that I think that, like, Jose Barrios might get forgotten a little bit because he's in Minnesota. And Minnesota has been very good, so there's not a lot of, people aren't just actively probably watching a lot of Twins games. When you go back and you look at what he's done, right? Like, he could be a 200 inning starter, 200 strikeout starter this year with a sub 4 ERA. And let's not forget, he's 24. Like, he'll start next season at the age of 24 and turn 25. So there's still lots of room for him to get better, right? He's got better than a 3-to-1 K to walk ratio. I mean, like, I know last year's Twins look like a bit of a mirage, but I mean, if that version of the team somehow reappeared next year, I mean, Barrios could be a 17 game winner, right? Like, he's won 11 games on a bad team. And I think there's still lots of reason to be optimistic with Barrios. It's coming up to my pick in the seventh round right now. And I think, like, at seventh round, 10th pick, like, it's very possible that I will be using him in this spot because I want to get another starting pitcher. So, and he looks like he's probably the best guy left available.
Yeah, well, that's only a round difference, so that's not too bad. I think my first pick in the seventh round is very interesting when I took Aguilar. Again, he's a guy that you had to really go all the way down last year's draft list to see Aguilar. And he's a guy, his season has run in fits and spasms this year. I mean, he looked like a potential MVP candidate at one point this year. And yet there's things to really like about him. He doesn't strike out a lot for a middle of the order type, and for a guy who's going to hit 35 to 40 home runs. He's been in an R, you know, he's on the verge of a 100 RBI season, which, considering that he had to split time with Thames to start the season, is pretty extraordinary. They've stuck by him once the season has really gotten going here. I thought Aguilar, as the first pick in the seventh round, I thought was pretty viable. Do you agree with that?
I do, and I also think it's worth noting that, like, the Brewers could still be better next year than they were this year. Because there's still lots of talent on that team. So that offense should still be good. And at least you can take some solace in knowing that you aren't the highest person taking him in the draft, because he went at pick 64 in my draft, which this person I don't know, but Pat Wisniewski followed right after he was chosen, noted, "Nobody fucks with the Jesus." If we have any Big Lebowski fans out there.
Yeah, that's very nice. How did these rounds go for you, brother? Or you, the sixth round, I suppose.
Yeah, so I got D. Gordon in the sixth, but a 4-round drop on where he went last year in drafts. He's missed some time this year, but when I looked at what my team looked like from a construction standpoint, I had almost no seals. So getting a guy that's perennially been about a 300 hitter. He's got 30 steals in a full season's worth of games played. He probably pushes closer to 40 on that. He's a no power guy, but at this point, I feel like I've got a good base of home runs between the other guys I've selected. So I feel like getting those steals out of the way right now with D. Gordon's a nice value. And I think he will hit better next year than he did this year, given he's had to make quite a bit of adjustments. And you know, sounds like there's might also be some locker room issues in Seattle as well. So like that pick there. And then right now I'm just looking at, as previously noted, you know, looking at getting another starter. Well, there's something left to select. You know, starting pitching does look like it's really thin. Otherwise, I have considered relievers because none of them have gone off the board, which seems odd that, you know, we're in the seventh round and that hasn't happened yet. Otherwise, I'm just looking, you know, I'm just looking for best value right now. And that person is, you know, on my board. I also have Scooter Gennett. Not sure I want to get too many Reds. Edwin Encarnacion still around, which would add more home runs that I already have, but would also fill in my utility spot. So Didi Gregorius is also a kind of a nice value that's still sitting around as a guy that's got 26, who's as a shortstop with, you know, that's going to hit around 30 home runs for you and not hurt you in any offensive category.
Yeah, Didi Gregorius was gone by then. He went before me in the sixth round, so I realized that had happened. It's gonna be pretty interesting to see how filling out the roster plays, and we may touch on this again next week. This is sort of as much draft as I want to go through right now. I did take Roberto Osuna, by the way, as my closer with upside, and as this draft goes on, we'll talk to you guys exactly about how frustrating trying to figure out what's going to happen next year with relief pitchers.
That one.
Yeah, I mean, I did think there was some risk there, and I could have taken Raisel Iglesias, but Iglesias only has 28 saves this year, and I do like to have a save ceiling that I'm not sure the Reds offer them yet until they get their pitching fixed. So, you know, again, that's why we do this, because there'll be a long debate. When Osuna has pitched this year, he's pitched brilliantly, actually.
he is a very good pitcher. I'm just really worried that he could I'm really worried that he ends up at best with a lengthy suspension, and at worst he could be like in jail or deported.
I mean, I guess that's altogether possible, but I'm trying to figure out in my head why they've let it go on this long if he's in that much trouble. And of course, nobody knows the real story or the whole story. But yeah. I guess people that are in Canada probably know more about it than I did. I already owned Wade Davis, and it was between Wade Davis and him and Iglesias for sure. And that's right towards the end of people that we actually know and believe are going to be closers already in our draft. We're six or seven relievers deep in our draft already. So it's not always easy to tell, but I figure you're going to end up, if there's an environment where you want to take an upside reliever, maybe this is it, because there's going to be so much just random dispersion, you know, of closers going forward. So anyway, Andrew, why don't you, give us your Twitter handle again, and I'll try and package this all up and get it out for people since we didn't get a podcast to them last week.
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at Andrew K. Dewhurst.
Yeah, I really appreciate you working with me. We had some troubles getting together this week too, so that's why it's going to come out a little later in the week, I fear. But thanks so much. I mean, I do think these way too early mocks are really fascinating, and they help people know exactly what they have and how the perception of their players that they own now, what that is going to look like going forward. Because nobody, I can tell you, this is the only draft I do that's star-studded for sure. And so it creates some really interesting information. I'm Chuck Anderson. I can be reached at Just Chucking It. And we will be back at you next week, hopefully on the verge, or maybe I'll be celebrating the Brewers clinching a playoff spot. All right. Thanks so much for the listen, and we appreciate it. And the end of the baseball season is as good as the beginning, so make sure you keep paying attention. We will talk back at you guys soon.